Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Oh, here we are. I have a very special guest with me today. Oh, that's annoying. Let me turn that down. A very special guest with me today. It's a human being with a penis.
I do have one of those.
It's my friend JC Babes. Jason Prentice.
It's so good to be here, Mr. Steph.
Mm. I swapped out Hannah for Jace. I've been planning to do this for a while now. Planning to have a guest on. You're our first ever guest. And it came at the perfect time because Hannah at the moment is... how do I put this?
Swanning around with the kids somewhere lovely.
She is, but she's also going through a tricky time in her
month.
Okay. And I have to fly very low under the radar right now. Like I am so low. I feel like a stealth bomber. I'm so low. I'm dressing in beige, so I'm not even nothing stands out.
There's
no, I've got no red on me. I've got nothing that could in any way trigger her. I am so low and just so I am flying low.
Blending into the background.
You're not even here. No, literally. It's terrifying. Hannah, I love her to pieces, but she is a fiery little thing, man. She's like, her sister calls her a Jack Russell, and I can see why. She can be quite,
Chomping at your heels.
Yeah. So
Hannah, I love you. You're lovely. Everything this man says is a lie. You're wonderful.
So I hate this question. Because whenever people say to me like, oh, tell me about yourself, it's the reason I came off Clubhouse, because I was on that Clubhouse for a while. You came on it, didn't you?
I did. I got as far as logging in.
Yeah. Well, let me explain why it's so awful. It's because basically you have these people who like to sell. Well, they're very like self-promotional. They like to sell themselves quite a lot. So they'll tell you all about like everything from their 50-meter bloody swimming badge going up. You know, they're so... I don't know what it is. They don't have any of that kind of self-loathing that I think is so important to have.
Yeah, it should be terrible to promote yourself. It should.
So when you say to somebody like, introduce yourself, it's like, well, who is that self? Who is that person? What are you trying to say? What you're kind of saying there is like, put yourself in a box with people so they can understand what
that person is. It's an interesting question because it's like, which self? You know, you're a different self to different people to some extent. Yeah. There's me, the super pirate self. There you go. There's some promotion. Buy now. There's me, the jiu-jitsu self. There's me, the... what other selves have I got? Those are the two biggest selves.
The lover.
The lover. The friend.
The brother.
The brother.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. There's all these different selves. And I watched that thing, I think. Have you seen it? Chasing the Now, is it called, or Chasing the Present?
I haven't seen. I think you told me about it.
It's very good.
It's on the list. On the list.
Yeah, get it up there on the list, mate, because it's really good. But there was a question that one of the guys on it that was featured on it asked somebody. Said, "Who are you?" And the person was like, "Well, you know, I'm so and so. My name's John." No, not John. Who are you? He's like, "Well, I'm an accountant." No, not. I don't want to know that. And he basically kept drilling down to, "Who are you? Who are you? Who are you?" Until you get down to that raw version of who you are, and then it's quite a confusing place to be.
Maybe you don't even know.
You're basically, "I'm a bunch of trembling atoms." Mm. Well, are you really that? God, how far can you go with this?
Yeah, yeah.
So it's very difficult. I find that really hard when you're writing bios and stuff like that on things.
Mm-hmm.
I find anything where you're kind of bigging yourself up excruciating.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not only to listen to, but especially with myself saying anything, you know, I feel like, I think it's, I don't know, I think it's maybe it's an Irish thing that you're not supposed to pick yourself up.
Yeah, I mean, it's that fear of being egotistical and being disingenuous. You know, it is difficult to self-promote. I think I've gotten better at it from a business point of view over the years. I do feel that I can tell, you know, it's okay to be proud. I think I've gotten better at that without feeling, oh no, I'm being arrogant by telling people that I'm good at what I do.
Mm-hmm. You are very good at what you do. You run a successful a kids club, Super Pirates, and the kids love it. They absolutely love it. And I love it because it's kind of a bit like, they love it because it's kind of, well, you don't, there's not a strict environment of what they should be doing. It's like, go there, have fun, be awesome. Just go crazy. Like, have water fights, do whatever you want to do. They come back, they're like covered in paint and mud, and just how you want your kid to turn up. Like, they just had the best day ever and they're just exhausted. And
it's play.
Play.
It's letting kids be kids at their own speed and in their own way. Mm. And we're just there to facilitate that and to help them be the most awesome versions of themselves. That's our mission is how can we inspire those little people to be their best.
Now, what amazed me about you is that you actually initially were always planning to go and join the Marines.
To be a killer. A stone cold killer.
It was a Marine you wanted to be, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's right. So actually all through my childhood and my teens, and any of those careers fair days, there was no question that you know, you'd fill in the form and they'd ask you to tell your interests and what you like and what you don't like, and oh, maybe you can be a X, Y, or Z. I already knew it was to be in the Marines. There was a time when I wanted to be a fighter pilot, but I think I knew that I didn't have the academic credentials to get there. And to join the Marines, to me, growing up was it was this idea of purpose, this idea of adventure, this idea of putting yourself to the test, fulfillment, or it seemed like such a rich and good life to lead. Mm. My stepdad was in the Marines, grew up playing Red Alert and believing that we were the good guys. And then they just felt that would be a really noble, amazing life to live. That, you know, as a kid, you don't consider the getting blown up, losing friends, having your eyes blown out, you know, all these losing a leg, all these awful things.
Yeah.
So for the longest time, that was the plan until I broke my leg when I was 18 in Thailand on a gap year. I thought I'd take a year out before I joined the Marines.
Millennial.
And I broke my leg, and by the time I'd recovered from my broken leg, that's when Afghanistan and Iraq was you know, really coming into full flow. And I remember thinking, suddenly I had this, for the first time I had a dilemma, because I couldn't easily justify in my mind what we were doing in these places, and I thought, well, if I don't know you know, whether giving my leg or my life or my friends for this cause is the right thing to do. If I don't know, then the answer has to be no.
Yeah.
You can't go into that kind of thing 50-50.
Don't they strip that out of you? All of that questioning of if it's the right thing or the wrong thing morally to do. Isn't that in the whole training and the onboarding? Aren't you just stripped of all of that?
Yeah, I think when you're in, that's the case. And, you know, speaking to my older brother is in the Marines, and he served a few times in Afghanistan, and, you know, I speak to him and, you know, they're just fighting for each other. Mm. You know, it's camaraderie that keeps them fighting. But obviously you get to that point once you're in. I never joined.
But so you had the choice before you had, were stripped of the ability to make that conscious decision.
Yeah.
You had the choice to be like, no, I'm not
exactly
doing this.
And I said, I know what I'll do. I'll become a clown and run around and entertain little children at their birthday parties.
But I like how you offset that with being a bit of an injury. You got your purple belt now, aren't you, at jiu-jitsu? Yeah. When do you think you're going to get your brown?
Oh, I think that with consistent work, let's see what the coach says, but I think maybe it could be a year, 18 months, something like that.
Yeah.
I'm in no rush. You know, the idea of having a black belt wrapped around my waist one day is
it would feel good, wouldn't it?
It's an incredible thought, you know. Yeah. There are a few things at jiu-jitsu that give me more joy than watching someone receive their black belt. You know,
that's 10 years over, that's, probably that's, like 10 years
that's
of training.
That's 10 years of dedication to something, to anything that it's just amazing to see that the result of all of that hard work and accumulated knowledge gets wrapped around someone's belt in that symbol.
Yeah. Yeah. It seems so far away. I'd had a promise. I promised myself, when I was about 38, when I first started doing jiu-jitsu, 38, 39, I was like, if I don't have a blue belt by 40, I'm quitting because I don't want to be a white belt 40-year-old. It's depressing. But then I've hit 40 after lockdown. I was like, I want to get back to it. I had the craving to get back to it. I just felt like it was missing from my life. So I got back into it. And I feel like the black is so far away. But then I went in the other day and I said to the professor, I said, look, does anyone ever get a black belt when they start in their 40s? And he said, yeah, you just named a few people that have, that go to that.
And look how ninja they are by 50.
Exactly. Yeah. So I do think that it's not impossible. And if I could do it one day, if I could wrap that black belt around my waist, I'd feel so...
I mean, the pride that you must have for that.
But then there's another belt after the black, isn't there? There's a red belt.
Then you're into the, you know, that the red belt is something that you could safely assume you won't get, you know. I think that's like a literal lifetime of jiu-jitsu.
Well, it's a possibility for Grayson and Rufus, considering Grayson started at 4, Rufus started at 3.
Yeah.
So if I can keep,
I mean, those guys, they're good. If they keep at jiu-jitsu, I mean, you wait until they're 15, you wait.
You know what motivates me is not just the feeling that I when they leave the house and they're a little bit older, that they have that skill of defense. Because I just think they're going to go to an all boys school around the corner from us because we literally live next door to it. So they're going to go to that all boys school. So I know what kids are like. They're dicks. They're awful. There's a lot of kids out there who are pricks.
Yes.
They're pricks for a reason, obviously. They probably have, you know, pricks for parents, but whatever, regardless of that, they are pricks and there are bullies out there and there are people that will try and, you know, pick on them. Mm-hmm. So I want to know that if that does happen, that they have that skill. I did a tiny bit of judo when I was a kid, and that being the only English boy in an Irish school helped me a lot because I would get picked on a lot. So every now and again, when it would come to a scuffle, I kind of knew a few moves that I could get, you know, I could do well in wrestling. Mm-hmm. And just to know that when they go out there, even when they're older, 18, 19, when they start, you know, dating girls and there's all sorts of, if there's ever a scuffle, just to know that they've got that skill and they're going to be safe.
It's incredible. I think any parent should be considering educating their children with martial arts. It's massive, and it's not about being really good at beating someone up. I mean, it is that, but for my personal experience of jiu-jitsu is that there's nothing in my life has been more empowering yet also so humbling at the same time. It gives me the confidence. I can walk into the gym and there'll be a brand new guy that's looking so rough and ready. You know, he's the kind of guy that you'd see out on a Friday night and you think, oh, he looks a little bit scary. Mm. But when you grapple with them, you tie a bow around them. You tie them in knots. It's like, it's too easy. Mm. So you have this, and then obviously you now know that, hold on, this guy that looks scary, he's not scary because he doesn't know how to handle his body. Yet at the same time, there are guys there at jiu-jitsu that are so unassuming, little geeky looking dudes that will tie me in knots.
Yeah.
So that gives me the confidence to go out and feel like I can look after myself, but not the arrogance to feel like I can go and start something.
Yeah.
Because you look around and you have no idea what's in someone's arsenal. So why start something?
The fascinating thing that I find about jiu-jitsu is the correlation between how the physical form can transcend over to the verbal form. So for instance, Joe Rogan, biggest podcaster in the world, extremely successful. Mm-hmm. And I listen to him and I wonder why. I'm like, what makes this guy mm-hmm. so successful? And I've listened to countless hours worth of his stuff. And I can, after doing jiu-jitsu for a while, I could see a correlation between how he converses and how you roll. Mm-hmm. Because when you're rolling, you're looking for openings, you're looking for places to mm-hmm. move into, you're looking for areas to exploit, you're looking for opportunities, basically. Always looking for ways to maneuver yourself into an opportunity. And he does that verbally when he's talking to people, mm-hmm. when he's communicating with people. So his communication is kind of tied into this jiu-jitsu, which I can't kind of now consider like an art form mm-hmm. more than I just see as a martial art, because it's just so, it's like a dance. It's like mm-hmm. an intricate dance with someone. And, mm-hmm. and the fascinating thing about it is that the better the person is, the less energy it takes and the more fluid it is and the more mm-hmm. enjoyable it is. But mm-hmm. you know, the people who are just new to it, they just think it's all about, mm-hmm. It's about winning. It's about, mm-hmm. you know, just submitting somebody. That part of it exists for new people, but once their ego's in check, once they've realized what it's about, and it's about this intricate interplay and dance and maneuvering and finding opportunities and creating spaces and creating a space to move into, then mm-hmm. it just takes on a whole new meaning and you just understand it from such a deeper level.
Yeah, it's interesting, a few things there. What it's interesting what you say about it being it having reflections in conversations. And actually our professor Salvo Gracie Bahabath, little plug there for Salvo, he's described it to me. Well, this is throughout the ages, people have said that jiu-jitsu is basically a case of you do this, I do that, you do this, I do that, until basically someone runs out of options. So there is that does mirror, there are mirrors in conversations.
Well, interesting though, there's not that many women that do it, is there? I mean, it's probably about 90% men, mm-hmm. I'd say. You do get the occasional women in there, but mm-hmm. I would like to see more of that.
Yeah,
which would be good.
It would be really good.
Yeah.
Again, you know, for any parents that are, you know, who are listening to this, if you have young girls, send them to jiu-jitsu. Yeah. It's a fantastic, you know, that confidence that you'll have that they can look after themselves and that they'll have in themselves is amazing.
Yeah.
And it works. It really works. Mm. You know, you can be a smaller person. You can be a woman and to tie a bigger man up in knots, break their ankles, break their arms.
And the interesting thing, you're never going to get a bully who is good at jiu-jitsu, because they've been so humbled and they understand physical conflict and they understand the respect that goes into that and how it should never be. Well, it's all a defensive mechanism. Mm-hmm. It's all about defense. Mm-hmm. So I think it would just, you know, you'd never really get bullies that do martial arts.
Well, like one of the things about bullying, you know, often bullies are the people that have the lower self-esteem. Mm. They have something to prove. Mm. Now, if you know how to handle yourself, then you have nothing to prove. Mm. So you can confidently go about your day knowing that you don't have to push someone around to feel good about yourself.
Yeah, yeah. I remember one time in my school in Ireland, some bloke put a screwdriver to my throat.
Wow.
Yeah, it threw me against the wall. And I remember just being like, it's only kind of recently reminded myself of that. I was like, God, I actually wasn't as affected as that as I probably should have been.
No.
Maybe I've got a good excuse to blame a few things on that weird altercation. But it was, it does open your eyes a lot when you are like the outsider in an environment like that, you know, when you rock up to a place, you know, because you never know what happens. Like suddenly we're in Ireland and I'm like, oh shit, now I need to know how to defend myself because I'm the kid that stands out, the really handsome looking English kid.
You're gorgeous. Yeah, absolutely
Irish
beautiful.
Girls fancy.
Yeah, what is Hannah's problem?
Weirdly though, I'll be honest, in Ireland, when I lived there maybe about 7 years, maybe I was so like, I never had a girlfriend or like got, I just wasn't very good with girls out there. I don't know why that was, because I moved out to England and it was fine, but out there I just really struggled with the ladies. And I think maybe it was the accent. I don't know. Maybe it was just like their dads would have hated the fact if they were dating an English guy.
Yeah, it was taboo.
It was too taboo. Yeah.
I was terrified of girls until I was about 12. I think I was in year six, and a girl that I fancied, a word got around that she, no one knew that I liked her because I was terrified.
Yeah.
But word got around that she liked me, and I was just horrible to her. I couldn't handle the idea of having some kind of, I was so embarrassed.
Yeah.
So embarrassed.
I remember falling in love with a girl at school, and every time I'd look around, she'd be looking at me, and we'd always be looking at each other, and I'd be like, there's definitely something going on here. Like she was like, her name was Rachel Hill, and she was, at the time I thought she was the prettiest girl I've ever seen in my life. She was so beautiful. And we kept looking at each other. So I was like, well, obviously she wants to go out with me, whatever that is. So I just rocked up to her one day. I said, do you want to go out with me? And she was like, no. It broke my fucking heart. I was like, what do you mean? No. What do you mean?
And
no?
Then you realized
like, we look at each other all the time.
And then you realize the grimace that she had on her face.
Maybe she was looking at me because I was just turning around looking at her. She was like, why is this fucking kid turning around looking at me the whole time?
Yeah, there is that.
But I was convinced that was it. God, I remember the amount of times that you get brokenhearted as a kid with girls, man. It was a bloody nightmare. Yeah, I never understood them for such a long period of time. And I should have because I grew up mostly with my mum and my sister. So I always had an intricate understanding of women and the cycles of women. That was a big thing. I was always aware of, we lived in a very cycle kind of environment with my mum being, very prone to, how do I put it politely? Well, there'd be a very dense atmosphere occasionally. I don't know if this is the same with all, I feel bad for girls, that they are so, that they're so, controlled by their hormones, so they have so like for us it's kind of easy.
They have this whole extra dimension to their existence,
and they know they're being controlled by it. Like they know this is making me a dick, but I can't do anything about it. I just can't because it's so overwhelming, and it's trying to come out in different ways, and you can see it. Like sometimes it comes out in sadness, sometimes it comes out in anger or hostility or resentment, but some shit needs to come out. I mean, not just the womb bits, but like the mental side of it. And to have like, I do feel bad for her. She says, imagine, like Hannah's always like, imagine like just once every 6 weeks, whatever, you just get flooded with these hormones. Mm-hmm. You just can't control them. And just what was really difficult for a while there was Hannah was on the pill. And that would just, I've been with a few girls, but I hate the pill with the passion. Like I just can't stand it. I've seen it affect so many girls I've been with in such a bad way. It's very rarely I've met a girl who's been on the pill who hasn't been completely destroyed by it in some way, just mentally. I just think it's such an unhealthy, weird thing to do. I still don't really trust them. But then there really is no simple answer for contraception. I mean, you've got like the coil, that's one option. That's okay, I suppose. That's about the best one. But then still the girl has to get the coil put in.
Yeah.
Hannah wants me to get the snip.
Really?
She wants me to get the snip. Okay. In. Yeah. And I've for a while been like, no.
Just to leave the option open of growing the tribe.
This is what Hannah says. She's like, you just want to date some 20-year-old. And I'm like, why would I ever want to date a 20-year-old?
I know how much you hate kids.
Exactly.
Like, I've never met a man who hates his kids so much. He loves his kids. He loves his kids to the end of the world, but I love your frankness in how much they also just piss you off.
Yeah. I'm not. I just don't think I'm that cut out for it. I don't think many people are. People are just good at pretending they are. I just think some people are really cut out for it and some people aren't. Anyway, Hannah's, so she gets upset. She thinks you just want to date like a 20-year-old girl. I'm like, the idea of dating a 20-year-old for me is just not appealing at all. Like I'd be in a weird situation. Say if Hannah got hit by a bus, I'd be like, well, okay. So who would I go for now? We've had this conversation a few times. It's like, okay, well, I've decided that I'd want a girl who's bereaved. She was married or she's probably doesn't have kids because then I'd have to have more kids. I don't want any more kids. Yeah. So she'd have to be probably not want kids and bereaved.
Yeah. So your options are narrowing.
Yeah. Yeah. So, which is, and that's that, it's a tricky one. But then having somebody say, right, I want you to snip yourself makes you kind of drag your heels on it. So I need to take some time.
It's a scary thought.
I said
although I have heard that you can reverse it sometimes.
So, it's very tricky to do that. It's very tricky to do that. And it's complicated. There's even could be complications when you do it. So it's just always a risk. And also, like, I mean, I never, ever want to have more kids. But imagine if Hannah decided to leave me.
She ran off with the kids.
She ran off with the kids.
And you needed some easy replacements.
I met somebody, like, say like a 27-year-old girl who was like, Steph, I really want your kids. And I promise you, you don't have to do anything. I have a friend. I have a friend that had that deal. He was like, I don't want another kid. She was like, I'll do everything. He's like, you promise you'll do everything? She's like, yes.
And wow.
She literally does everything.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, it's so funny. But I, no, I wouldn't do that. Obviously, I wouldn't do that. But I kind of would want to have a contract signed to say, yeah, you know, I don't have to get up or anything.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, I give him a cuddle a couple of times a day.
Yeah, do the cutesy things.
Do the cutesy things. No, but I'm obviously joking. But no, I don't want any more kids under any circumstances ever. But I also terrified of the idea of like shooting blanks. And
I mean, it's a scary idea of taking away that option.
Yeah.
Just stop with the sex. Just go into full, Hannah's just done her yoga course. Just become full-time yogis that just grace this planet with no need for any sexual desires or alcohol or any external pleasure things. Just sit within yourself.
I mean, that sounds lovely. And perfect and wonderful, but you also have a mortgage to pay, gas bills coming in, and electricity bills, and like school shit. I'm desperately trying to engineer a life where I can be able to do that, where everything in terms of like finances are secured in a way. Like yourself, I thought crypto might have been the answer to that. But we've since learned a hard lesson on that. But
the amount of emoji faces myself and Steph have just been sending each other of just grimacing.
Don't look today. Grimacing. Don't look today. We're down. Then, oh, mate, have a look today. We're up. But it's just a roller coaster of emotions, that whole side of things. But I don't know if that's going to be the answer. I'm hoping beyond hope that my new marketplace platform will be the answer.
It's exciting, though.
Man, it's really exciting. I've got 175 applicants now, people that want to get on board with this thing. So they're people I have to individually go through, look at what they're offering, look at what they're doing, and then onboard them to the platform. I've decided to do like quarterly onboarding. So I'll only onboard a certain amount of people every quarter, and then it'll be closed, and then it'll be like, and then there'll be, you have to wait for the another quarter, you have to apply and then wait for the next quarter to go through. So I'm onboarding therapists at the moment. I just think that's such an important, I mean, how it's gonna work out is that it's gonna be cheaper than all the other marketplaces, but I think what I'm gonna try and work out is like therapists that are on there, they're offering something that they're really gonna help people, they'll get like a reduced fee, because I really want some kind, I want people to come to this platform and actually get help for mental health, help with their mental health. I just think it's such an important thing now to have. It's helped Hannah and I, like we've been to a marriage counselor before, only a couple of times. And it's such an important thing to do, because there's some times where you and your missus can, things can just get out of control. Like you you don't know how to control them because you're just so emotionally swept up in some argument that it just turns to tyranny, and we needed a way to control that. Like, how do we manage this when the arguments explode? How can we pragmatically fix that shit? And they just give you a few things that, like, what she just said was so simple but so easy. She just said timeouts. She just said use timeouts. So it blows up. One of you just says timeout. And you just have to respect that. Yeah. You have no choice but to, you have to be like, okay, going to take 10 minutes away, 15 minutes away, 20 minutes away to calm down. And then all those kind of chaotic emotions are just distilled. And then you can come back to it. And then if it blows up again, okay, let's time out on this. So they really help to when you feel it building up to something big, time out early, go and do your separate shit, come back. That's easier for me to do than it is for Hannah. She finds time out very difficult.
She wants to address it.
I smelt the blood, man. I'm coming for your jugular.
Yeah.
So it's a bit harder with Hannah. So you have to use, you can't just use them all the time. And you can't like,
if you overuse them, Hannah, you just had a timeout.
Hannah, by the way, I had an affair last week. Timeout.
yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah.
Just relax.
So you have to use them with respect. You know, there's a time and a place.
It's great that you're using the platform to, for that higher purpose, not just to get shit sold, but to you see that there's an opportunity to put some good into the world.
Well, this is the thing, man. This is because I was like, even with the initial platform, when I built it, I was like, I find it quite consumer driven. It's about consumering. It's about consumering. Sorry, it's about the
buying, selling,
buying, and yeah, and wanting, more, desire. More. Like the whole thing is called want feel. Like, what do you want? And I was like, I should pivot this. And I've always wanted to pivot into being like, you know, wants aren't just fucking gadgets and widgets and shit. They're also like skills and talents and, you know, and mental health and physical health. They're wants. Mm-hmm. So I should be leaning into that far more rather than just be like nice shit that you can buy for your, you know, your wall that you'd be happy about for 10 minutes. And then, you know, the sadness will creep back in. It's like, I want to reach out to all those people out there who have a talent and give them a platform. Mm-hmm. And I just think there's a lot of work to do, but what the plan is just to kind of, the plan isn't to make any money on it. I'm just going to reinvest everything that it makes in trying to get all these people's businesses succeeding. But I also don't want it just to be a platform. I also want to do like live conversations.
Wow.
To people, to all the vendors, who all the verified stores will have access to kind of like a private Facebook kind of group. And then I'll do live conversations with people like our friend Neil, who's really, you know, entrepreneurial.
So it becomes social.
It becomes a hub where we don't just give you a platform, but we give you a support, and we work with each person on there to be like, how can we build this, help build this for this person to make this thing more sustainable? Because what lockdown taught me, man, it was such a hard lesson in like, shit, Steph, you need to have backups. And not having, and before Dad died, he was always really worried about that. He's like, you know, you just have this one big revenue stream coming in for your YouTube stuff. If that stops, what happens? And then COVID happened. The tap stopped, and we were like, fuck, we've got no backups, we're screwed. And then I just realized, shit, I need to go all ham on the backup. So then I was like, well, then we made Grace and Ashes the print site, and I was like, well, that's okay, because we got a voice, we can tell people to buy prints, we sold loads of prints, but like, that's okay for us, and it's okay for me to tell people, oh, you need to have backups. But what about if we use that voice that we have and that social influence that we have and the experience that we have in this space to give other people backups and to help them with their thing? So it's not just like us being like, okay, we'll buy our prints. It's like, well, now you've got this person here, buy their coffee. You know, this is an independent person who set up this coffee company. But, you know, why don't you go and check out their coffee? And there's their page you can follow, and there's their Instagram, and there's this other person over here doing therapy. Why don't you go and, you know, book some time with them, an hour with them?
You feel a higher purpose of sorts to what you're doing, really?
Man, I just feel so, I've never been more impassioned about anything, I think, in terms of business-wise in my life. Like, I feel really? I've been waiting so long for this pivot. I've been waiting so long. For 8 years, we've been running this site, and I've been like, I know it needs to pivot. I know there needs to be some fundamental shift that happens, but I could never figure out what that was. And then at the back of my head, I was always like, I want people to be able to sell on this platform. All of a sudden, all the stars aligned. We started to build this thing. Initially, it was just like an extension to OneFeed, and it became such an amazing thing that I was like, this should absorb OneFeed and now be OneFeed. So no longer be the extension to it. This should be it. This is what it's all about. And now I've got the pivot I need. I'm like, okay, now I just need to nurture all of those relationships with all of those verified stores, help them all out in a really kind of, you know, granular way, and just be this really cool marketplace where you can buy stuff from independents, but also, you know, learn how to play an instrument or learn from somebody.
What's your biggest challenge with this? What are you struggling with the most?
At the moment, development's going really well. My time is the struggle at the moment.
Okay, that'll lead into my next question, but carry on.
I suppose that's the main thing. It's what I'm finding I'm comparing it to OneFeed, which was very tricky because OneFeed was a difficult platform to sell because it'd take me 5 minutes to explain to you what it was. Because I've got to say, okay, if you say, what is OneFeed? I've got to say, well, currently it's this website which allows you to list products from websites, and then we pay you an affiliate revenue every time it's bought. And you're like, what's that? What's an affiliate revenue? It's like, to get you up to speed on what that platform is, it's actually quite a bit of an uphill struggle, and sites, websites and platforms should be very easy.
You need to get it straight away.
Exactly. So with this, it's like, well, I'm a community marketplace. I'm a marketplace where you can buy stuff from independent people or learn stuff, or so much easier to explain. So I'm comparing it in terms of how difficult OneFeed was to how difficult this is. And it's far easier, and everything's just flowing nicely. I have a huge meeting on Friday with a social strategist who's going to go through everything on the site and all the people who have applied and figure out who we want on board and how we're going to, you know, work with them and build, like, even just down to a granular level of the wording and how we're going to frame everything before we launch. But it's been amazing, man. And I've loved it, but I'm also quite scared because I'm very much throwing a lot of my eggs in this.
Yeah. yeah,
basket.
And time wise, that's something that's always that I've always admired about you is how does this man have the time to do so many things so well?
Well, this is the problem, man. It's like things have to take a back seat while other things, you know, have to get in the front. It's why the YouTube channel, the videos have slipped so much, or, you know, every now and again we'll miss a podcast, or every now and again, I'm trying to juggle so much, but trying to juggle all this, but with kids is such a new level of pain, because you've also got Hannah being like, I need 2 hours off, take Rufus today. And Rufus would just be, you know, I love spending time with him, but he doesn't shut up.
No.
Just like, he just will not stop talking. You're literally just drained by the end of the day, because he just will not stop talking. But he's fun. He's great. But it's just, it's very difficult to juggle it all. Lots of caffeine.
Are you a late night worker? Do you sit up here till 2 a.m? Or
I'll work from, I work most nights till about 9. So I'll be, you know, start at, you know, 9 and work till 9 most nights. I just, like, we were going right back, reversing back to what you said before about that yogi lifestyle, about that. If I can get this marketplace to a level and get all of the cogs turning to the point where I can then sell it to somebody who has the same vision as me, I might have to work in-house for a couple of years with somebody. Mm. Like, somebody just come along and be like, I want to buy this thing. Mm. You're working in-house with me for a couple of years. We'll nurture it, we'll build it, and then I'll exit. And then it's like, okay, now I can actually finance my own videos. I can just do like my own vanity projects. I can make the videos I've been wanting to make for so many years. I don't have to pitch them to like producers or people or just, you know, I could work on branded work as much. I can just focus on the stuff that I just love making the most. And that's just telling stories, you know, that's what it all comes down to, is just I need enough shit going on in my life to be able to tell stories. Mm. And I think, like we spoke about the other day, I'm so confused deeply by life and every facet of it. I just wake up and I'm just like, what the fuck is going on here? Mm-hmm. Like, how is people just carrying on with their day and not freaking out? Like, how is
this just the very thought that we're here in the first place?
Dude,
you know, existentially,
yeah,
it's wild, isn't it?
Oh God. And what perplexes me the most is that people just watch the news. Like, oh, did you see what's happening? Mm. Oh God, you know, it's going on in Manchester.
There was a woman. There's nothing I find more bemusing and perplexing than trivial the anger. That we were in.
Trivial anger.
Just watching people in traffic jams getting angry at nothing, waving their arms around it. And okay, we all fall into a trap of becoming concerned by things that really don't matter, and life occasionally throws you a lesson that gives you a slap around the face and says, dude, stop fucking worrying about
the small shit.
It doesn't matter. In fact, most of the big things we worry about don't matter either. Most of them aren't as big as we think they are. But yeah, when people become angry about things that are so trivial. And you just think, dude, you're here.
Yeah, yeah.
You're here. Like, and in fact, it's for me, that shows you how good life must be. Where if you can get angry at a traffic light or someone kind of pulling out of you and in front of you in a way that, you know, was less than perfect.
Mm.
If that can make you that angry, then everything else you've got going on in your life must be bloody rosy. Or your life's so screwed up that you're just in a rotten place and everything leaves you annoyed. But the, you know, just the idea of being on this planet it should be enough for us all to walk around
in awe.
Mm,
you're right. Have you ever heard the expression NPC? Do you know
non-playable character?
Yeah. Do you know where that derives from? What that means?
No.
Like, it's, you know, when you play like a game like Zelda and you go into like a little shop and you see a guy in the shop and he's selling stuff, and that's all that person does.
In his own
little universe, he never changes. He never wavers. Whenever you're there, he's just there doing that one specific task, never thinking outside the box. He's just there to sell you your shit in that little shop.
Mm-hmm.
You have them all over the place, like people that you walk past in GTA, whatever. They're like the people that aren't you.
Mm.
They're the people that are autonomous, people that's carrying on, programmed, doing their thing.
Mm.
And I think there's so much of that out there, where so many people are kind of just so programmed, and they're not allowing, I just don't think like they're
They have their role.
They have their role. Like, that's me. They're defined by their role, and they're walking along and they're just carrying on. They're getting annoyed by small things, or something pisses them off, or they're just unable to step outside of this, their own internal universe, and be like, fuck, like, you need to break out of that and just see. And this is the thing. Like, it's just, I have to check myself with it all the time and be like, God, I'm just, okay, no, I need to remember the fact that this is all so peculiar and so strange. But anyway, and that's why I feel like this need to tell stories, because I'm so fucking perplexed by it. I'm so confused by it. I'm so you can't just put me on a fucking dirty old rock spinning in a vast space and expect me to just get up and eat my cornflakes and carry on with the day. I'm like, I need to make sense of this shit. Mm-hmm. I need to somehow make sense of it. And the only way that I can make sense of it in my own small way is to tell it as a story and to make it into a story. And I think that's the way all humans cope and deal with it. We're all just so desperately trying to find a story to make sense of shit, because we're all just so deeply confused. And I think, how could you not be? How could you not be? How could you never, ever look out that window, or never just... I was looking at a leaf yesterday for about fucking 15 minutes. You know, I wasn't on anything. I was just looking at this leaf and the intricacies of the leaf and the design of the leaf and being like, this is madness.
You know, funny, that's something I've do quite often. You find yourself, I don't know, you'd I remember doing it as a kid, picking up a little daisy and looking at it, but like really looking at it, like really getting up close to it and having a... You know, looking at the intricacies of the leaves and of the petals, and looking at the veins of it, and then you kind of you look at how much detail is in that little space and how much kind of design is in that tiny few millimeters across, and then you look up at the world and you just think, this whole world is that. Imagine I don't know how many megabytes of data is that. Like the whole world, all of that design is just, it's mind blowing.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's funny what you said about the NPCs as well, because especially when you live in a little town like Bath, as we do, you kind of, in your mind, you're the main character, and there's the guy that runs the coffee shop. Mm. There's the guy that you see on the bike every day. There's the postman. There's that guy that always wears that funny hat.
Yeah.
And they kind of become these NPCs you just see them. That's their role. That in your life, that guy is the guy in the hat.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But it's interesting, and that's one of the fascinating things about people watching, is that when you watch people going about their business and they pass in and out of your view, and when you stop for a second just to think, hold on a minute, that individual's life is just as rich and as wild and as difficult and as interesting as mine. With all those relationships and dilemmas and fantasies, again, if you're talking about megabits of data, like there's just so much going on.
Imagine going up to somebody on the street or in a cafe and just going, this is fucking mad, isn't it? And they'd be like, what? Just all this shit.
Everything.
Man. Everything's fucking crazy. Isn't it just mental? You know?
I'm this
lump of God knows fucking, we're trembling atoms chatting to you about how mental it all is. In this weird space, they'd be like, are you okay? Do you want me to call something?
Yeah, yeah,
people,
yeah.
They would never be like, you're fucking right, actually. It is mad.
Yeah, I mean, it does send you mad when you stop and so many things send you a bit loopy when you stop and think about it, whether it's like, you know, we've spoken about free will before. We've talked about free will, the scale of the universe, the all of these things are just, if you spend too much time thinking about them, you're going to go and...
This is the thing which always, you know, I always said to people who were religious growing up, because I obviously grew, you know, a lot of time I spent in Ireland, I was christened a Catholic. I went to a very Catholic school. And I used to get that question. People used to say to me, because I was sort of agnostic when I was there, believing in something, but not really having a fucking idea what that thing was. And people would say to me, you know, like, well, you know, What? How do you explain it all? And my answer was always the same. Even from when I was growing up, it was like, our brain is the size of a grapefruit. How could you possibly expect to understand the complexities of the universe with a computer that size, man? Like it's unbelievable. You can't just be like, oh, it's because of this bloke made it. It's like, well, we need to like understand how stupid, we, well, not stupid we are, but are we, well, yeah, how stupid we are. We are dumb creatures that just grunt at each other. You know, that's all we do. We're throwing out these grunts from out of our mouths, goes into our brain process. And we're, in one hand, we're, it's incredible and, you know, it's amazing. But on the other hand, break it down, it's quite rudimentary. It's like, you know, we are mammals communicating with grunts, trying to understand the complexities of the universe or make sense of it in a way that we can understand. We could never, I mean, my friend Zach says it to me, he goes, oh, my deathbed, I'd love it if somebody just whispered down to me, like, they told me the secrets of the universe. I'd be like, you would not be able to understand the secrets of the universe. There's a line, I think, in one of this book, Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, where, I'm going to bastardize this because it was 20 years ago, I read it, but where somebody was just exposed to the vastness of the universe and their head just exploded.
They couldn't
even begin to comprehend it. And that's how I see it all. I'm like, I would never understand it.
There's just no way. I mean, I read a fair bit of science, layperson science, stuff that kind of like Bill Bryson, The Short History of Nearly Everything, that kind of stuff. Yeah. I'd recommend reading it if you haven't already, but that kind of stuff, it just kind of helps your wonder of the universe and also helps to try and explain some of those things. And something that's helped me understand how there's no way that we can understand it all is that the space that we occupy as an individual is, you know, for a very short amount of time, traveling at a very, within a very small spectrum of speed and a very acute size. Mm. So when you think about the speed of things in the universe and the vastness of things in the universe, things are just operating in different ways on an atomic level and on the grander levels of the universe. Like we can't, it's like trying to, you know, explain the world to a gnat, you know, or an ant. You just can't. So when you start to think about things like the science of black holes and time matter, slowing down, and you just like, you can't get your head around it. I'm forever fascinated by the idea that people like, the very notion that someone like Einstein or Stephen Hawking. So I tried to read, I read Stephen Hawking's A Brief History of Time. Mm-hmm. And the science in it is so brain bending. You know, that's one thing, but even more brain bending is that someone was smart enough to think of that idea. You know, like Einstein deciding that, you know, the space-time relativity, like I find it hard enough to understand. Find that hard enough. So the power of that man's mind to actually come up with the theory and a science that appears to work is just incredible.
And that's a frustrating thing to read stuff like that, because on one hand you want to be educated, but the second time you feel so, well, I do, I feel so frustrated with my own intellect that I am unable to let any of that stuff, I understand any of that stuff. And I remember being at school at sometimes and being in lessons and being like, I find this interesting. And I'm so annoyed at my brain that it won't absorb it. Like it's like in maths. I was so bad at maths, but I always loved maths. I was like, this is such a beautiful, maths to me is like one of the most beautiful subjects.
It's stunning,
isn't it?
It's
beautiful. But I just didn't have the ability. Like I just, no matter how much I tried, and people would say, I don't think that everyone has the same, because I'm a perfect case of that. I'm not academic. I try and listen and pay attention. Stuff just doesn't sink in. It will not go into my brain.
I've read whole books and gotten to the end of it and just gone, fuck. I don't even know what I've read. I found it interesting and you're reading it going, wow. Wow. And then you reach the final page and you think, shit.
If somebody said to you, like, what was that book like? You'd be like, I don't know.
I read another Bill Bryson book. It was like the human body.
You can only read a few pages of that before you need to put it down.
It's almost like there's so much that you, I think what it does do is it leaves you with this kind of sense of wonder and respect for nature.
Well, the good thing about Bill Bryson is he doesn't feel the need to bamboozle you with all the kind of the stuff that most people don't understand. He distills it in a way that you can read that and be like, oh shit, that's interesting. Fuck yeah, he's got a good point. The way he presents it is very clever, I think, because it's just, you can pick it up and read it, and it's not just like, oh shit, this is a massive equation I need to understand.
Yeah,
you know. But yeah, it is a frustrating thing, and it's like it's the same thing with, you know, trying people that are just kind of, I get the need for religion, I understand the need for religion, and I respect it a lot, and I understand it's the need for people to have it, and I kind of wish I had it too, you know. I wish I believe in something, but it's a frustrating thing that I more believe in my own ignorance and my own inability to understand things than I believe in any higher force. But it's
I've had a few of the guys that work for me that have been quite religious, who absolutely believe, or in their mind, it's they know that there is a God. And I find that just the most amazing thought, that you'd wake up and you go about your day knowing, not a hunch or hoping, but knowing, at least in your mind, that there is a God. You imagine that? You imagine how different your life would just feel every day, just knowing that was there.
Yeah, which is where I think there is, but I just don't know. And that's how, you know, I just don't know. And I don't really know anything about anything. We just, you know, how much light can we see? If you look at the spectrum of light, we see a teeny fragment of the spectrum of possible light that is out there. But yet we think we can see everything. We can't, man. We're so blind to most of what's out there, and just trying to make sense of this very narrow spectrum that we can perceive. But there's so much more to it that you're just like, you couldn't even begin to wrap your head around.
Yeah, I mean, that ties in with, you know, it goes back to what I was saying earlier about the speed that we're traveling at, the scale that we live within, and you're right, the light that we perceive, the sounds that we perceive. There are, you know, octopus and jellyfish, that the world that they experience is an entirely different one. They don't, they don't, because their senses are different. So we experience the world through the senses that we have. If we felt the world through electromagnetic kind of forces, and we heard at different frequencies, the world would be an entirely different experience.
Well, this is my struggle with things. Well, there's two struggles I have with things like cancel culture. Is one is that for me, that's like people sweating the small stuff. It's like it's people having this kind of ideological battle, and they're so ingrained in this thing where it's like, all this, we live in this incredible, fascinating universe, an amazing world, and everything's so fascinating, but we're sweating about what somebody tweeted 10 years ago.
Yeah.
And that frustrates me, because it becomes a narrative, and then people jump onto that, and you're like, you're wasting your time with this shit, because you're fighting this ideological war. And instead of that, why don't you just fucking look up to the stars and look out there and be like, I'm in awe of it. And so that's one of the frustrations about this whole thing. But what was I going to say? The other one was now. So there was two reasons why it frustrated me. One was that. Only the second reason was because I don't believe in right and wrong. I don't believe anything is objectively right or wrong. I believe that's in everything that is considered to be right or wrong is an interpretation. I don't think from the universe doesn't see any act or everything is just movement of atoms. That's all it is. Every idea, every product, every conversation is just a movement of atoms. Nothing is right and nothing is wrong. When you see, you know, when we look on nature documentaries and we see like a little seal, a seal getting thrown around by a killer whale, we're like, that's so wrong, I hate seeing that, that's so wrong. The universe doesn't think that's wrong. That's just the movement of atoms. There's nothing inherently wrong, but we believe, and we're so conditioned to believe that there is inherently right. There is a right and a wrong, and there is in our society, but
like a moral right and wrong.
Exactly, but the moral right and wrong isn't this objective thing. It's not like a divine.
No, it's not a law of the universe.
It's exactly that. It's not a law of the universe. And so this is why I struggle so much with people who argue about things online, or even, you know, big things, you know, like the whole COVID, that's divided people, or politics or whatever. I see people sweating this stuff so much and fighting these battles. And I'm thinking, God, guys, like you, I get it. I get why you're doing it. But at the same time, it's like you need to understand that this is all just ideology and a war we're fighting over. Who wants to be, you know, who thinks that they've got the most righteous way of seeing the world.
I mean, when
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am, but Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
People become entrenched in ideologies. That's a really dangerous thing. Like, you see people that, for example, they would consider themselves either a conservative or a liberal, and therefore you see when they're presented with a new question, the first thing they ask themselves is, which is the most liberal answer might be the most liberal answer to this question, instead of,
or what's the path of least resistance normally? What's going to get me in the least amount of trouble here?
Yeah.
What's the most friendly society, like the forgiving thing that I could say that people are going to be okay with me? What's not going to cause me any hardship? I'll take that option, please.
I mean, in my mind, if you are, you know, going back to that right or wrong, I think it's, was it Sam Harris? I think he had an argument that there perhaps is a right and a wrong in that, is it is what you're doing causing it to, it, basically we should be setting out to not do harm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I guess there are simple questions like that, like is this doing more harm than, and actually I suppose those aren't always necessarily easy answers, you know, when Grayson is messing about or his behavior will cause him long-term ill, it's, you know, you will cause him immediate harm in order to, for the greater good. Mm-hmm. So it's not an easy answer, but I think that should be our compass as people, is to try to, you know, to leave the world, to be a net positive to the world that we're living in.
A counter argument to that would be, a net positive would mean live a full, fulfilling life and have enough offspring and carry on whatever. But then you could also argue the counterpoint to that would be like, you're just inherently designed and programmed to follow that path to sustain human life for as long as possible, or to maximize its potential on the earth. So as you live longer, you procreate more, you create more of us, you build a bigger, stronger society. There's more of us.
Yeah.
There's more demand on the earth. There's more demand on natural resources. Inherently, what the universe is, you know, the universe doesn't care. We're just a the earth to the universe is just, it's a piece of dust. You know, it's billions of galaxies out there. Billions, you know, it's mind blowing to think how vast it is. And we're just so precious about everything. Rightly so, but it's all kind of like a moral standard, an ideological moral standard that we've all subscribed to and agreed to, on the basis that it's going to prolong our existence as a species.
And it's an interesting, it is a relatively new question of the morals of how we treat the world that we live in, because until quite recently, there were limitless resources. You know, you weren't going to run out of buffalo. You weren't going to run out of fish. You weren't going to run out of forests. And now suddenly we're at this point that has come seemingly at us very fast, where it seems like, you know, we have an acute responsibility to not screw the place up.
Yes, we do. Which we do.
Which, by the way, I think the point I was going to make that goes against the more human the instinct for survival. That didn't, that over the millions of years, thousands of years, that hasn't cared about whether there's going to be any rainforest left. It's just cared about how you are going to get through the day.
Yeah. There was a documentary on a few months ago, a David Attenborough documentary, all about how much we're basically fucking up the planet. And I was so intrigued watching it. I was sort of, I could see what they were doing. You know, they first of all sing and dance about how incredible everything is, then how much we're fucking it up, and then what the answers are. It's the template they all use. And I was so fascinated to be like, what are they going to offer for a solution? Like, what are they going to say? And I was fascinated by what they didn't say, or what they didn't conclude, because they've got to be very careful with what they say at the end here. Because I think once you actually look at what actually needs to happen across the globe for humans to actually get to the point where we're not causing so much damage, the changes that we would have to make would just be, I mean, people wouldn't be prepared to never travel again, never drive a car. Mm-hmm. There's so many things you'd actually have to do to make a huge, massive difference. Mm. But anyway, they rounded it up by blaming it on women, which is great.
Hey?
In a very.
Okay.
Kids.
Don't have kids.
Yeah. Women are having too many kids. If you educate women, they have less kids, don't have as many kids. And this is a fascinating thing when I tweeted it a few months ago when I was sharing, like, you know, all these kind of changes you're making in your day by recycling and, you know, not driving and whatever. And I was looking at all the impact it has on your CO2 emissions. And then one of the bars at the end was just like, dwarfed these other things. And that was just having children. Amount of CO2. The problem is too many of us. I genuinely think there's too many of us. It's far too many of us.
I would push back on the educate women to say, you know, takes two to.
Yeah, of course.
But yeah, absolutely. There's,
I think they were saying basically educate women, not just across the globe, in third world countries where they tend to have a lot more kids. Mm-hmm. They tend to be a correlation between, lack of education and more children. Mm-hmm. That's just the facts. Can I say facts?
Facts.
But, you know, recycling back to what we were talking about earlier. I lived in obviously Northern Ireland for quite some time, and admittedly, 99% of people out there are not biased or not bigoted, but the few people are. And I was always fascinated by the people that were. I really wanted to talk to them. Mm. I was so fascinated by the people out there who hated the people who weren't the same religion as them. They just hated. There was Catholic and Protestants. Mm. And I realized where it came from. I mean, I only have to talk to them for a few minutes to unravel where it comes from. And it all comes from the parents. That's where it all seemed to come from. If the parents had that bigoted mindset of that seeing the other as the other religion, and it trickled down to the kids. It was very rarely you'd have these open-minded parents and a really bigoted kid.
And I mean, I think it goes to any thing about a child or about an individual. Like there's so much depends on well, so much depends on the parent. Like very, very rare. I meet a lot of children. And children come in 1,000 styles. There's endless types of kids or nuances. Mm. And the children that perhaps present the most difficulties, or are either to themselves or the more peculiar ones, the oddballs. Very often you meet the parents and then you go, or if there's behavior problems, you meet the parents, you go, okay. Mm, mm. Okay. Like I'd say 90% of the time.
But the problem is it's not the parents' fault because it's their parents' fault. You can keep going back. Yeah. So there's nowhere you can blame anyone for anything.
And even as a parent, I say that you can trace it back to the parent, but various sort of academics have said that basically the biggest influence on your child is, are their peers. So as they grow up, what friends they have. Mm. That's the biggest thing that will dictate whether they turn into a massive dick or a wonderful contributor to society.
Well, that's interesting. Yeah.
Yeah, they're friends. Yeah. So watch who Grayson's playing with.
Yeah. But I always love talking to people who have, like, I don't like silencing people because I want to listen to why they're, where they're coming from and understand it.
Mm.
And it's always fascinating when you do, because you always understand it comes from a place. It's never like, it's never comes from just them being a dick or them. There's so much nuance out there. And this is the thing that frustrates me so much with people being just shut down and you can't listen to that, but you can't listen to what that person has to say. And it's you need to unravel this. You need to look at this from, you know, everything is so, everyone wants everything in a headline. Everyone wants everything like really simply, like dumbed down version that they can understand, which I understand, because I was saying to Hannah this the other day, I was like, why do we have to pack, why do we have to create something and attach ourselves to it? Like, why do we have to, why, like Hannah and I are doing month on month off. We can't just cut down our drinking. We have to do a month on month off.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we can't just eat less meat. It's like the, what, so you're a vegan? No, we just eat less meat. We need to create a name or create something and then attach ourselves to that name and then be that thing. Like, we need to be teetotal or drinkers. It's like, you can't, it's very difficult to be something of something, if you know what I mean. It's very difficult to be, oh, I'm sort of a vegan, but not really. Or I'm sort of this, but not really. Or, you know, it's the desperate need to define ourselves and it's the desperate need to create something that allows people, like, we're going back right to the start of this conversation. Like, I didn't want to say, Jason, like, who are you? Like, and then put you down this place of like putting yourself into, I don't know, like a box for people to be able to understand. It's like, you're far more complicated and interesting and a great guy. And you're not going to get that just from a quick, this is me.
Yeah.
And this is the thing that frustrates me with the things that I look online, is like, when they're like, these are all these podcasts and they're like, I'm speaking to this person, they're listening off these credentials. I don't give a fuck. The most interesting podcasts for me, the people, like the ones I listen to, Joe Rogan, like, it's very, sometimes he gets some fascinating, interesting guests on, but most of the ones that I really enjoy are just his mates that he's just chatting to. Mm. And they just veer off in all different directions. They go and talk about all different sorts of things. It just goes, 1 minute can be talking about anything, like fucking bread making, and the next minute go off into, like, you know, cosmology. And it just goes everywhere. And they're the ones that I really like. I'm like, that's the conversations I want to have, you know, with those people. And I don't like this need of human beings to pigeonhole themselves into a particular place and say, this is me, I'm defined by this thing.
Yeah. And it's so important to open yourself up to all an array of opinions. You talked earlier about kind of, you know, we mentioned cancel culture and shutting people out.
Mm.
You know, I think that the one of the reasons why people didn't see Brexit happening or didn't see Trump happening, and these things that kind of catch us by surprise, are because we the way that we consume our media, you know, the amount of people, it frustrates the hell out of me when you see on Instagram, someone says, if you believe in this, then defriend me.
You're like, no, oh God, man, that breaks my heart. Yeah.
Don't defriend, do not defriend me. I want my, because all that happens there is you find yourself further and further and further down the rabbit hole, where you keep cutting out people that
you're digging a trench. That's all you're doing.
And you see people disappear in different directions. Yeah. You see, you know, I've watched friends, disappear down like the right, or disappear down the left. And you're just like, see you then.
Yeah.
Like, you, and then you become, you know, all kind of an extremist almost.
Yeah. Yeah. And this is the problem, being a moderate now isn't accepted. It's like,
whose team are you on?
Exactly. If you're not on our team, then you're on the other team. And no, it's one's. Like, come on, man. Like, I don't want to ever be on a team. And I spoke about Hannah about this before, but like, I was always scared that was just me being too gutless almost to choose a side, or like too afraid to be able to like get behind something and be like, I believe in this side. But like I said to you earlier, like, I don't believe inherently in right and wrongs. Which leads you down an argument of like, well, what about people in prison who commit a horrific thing? What if something happened to Grace? What if somebody, you know, did something horrific to my kids? I would kill them. I wouldn't be like, oh, they did, you know, I don't believe in right or wrong. I'm just as much subject to that mindset as everybody else is. Mm. But I still inherently understand everything that we do and everything we say and every interaction and every movement and every facet of our lives is almost like a play. Mm. It's almost like a theater.
Mm. We're all just making it up as we go along, aren't we?
It's like almost, you go to school and they're like, these are the basically foundations, and then you build on these foundations. Mm. This is what you do. You don't hurt other people. You do. You're a kind, decent person, and whatever. This is the history of, you know, they kind of give you the foundations to go off and do your things through subtle engineering. But and every culture is different, and every culture is completely different. But I just find it all such a pantomime, and this is what I find so difficult about, you know, social media. It's so obvious to me that this isn't, this is just, it's like an act. Mm. It's like an act. It's not real. None of it is real, but then it's like, what is real? I don't bloody know.
Does that give you, how does that, sit with the, you know, you and Hannah, obviously you are social media influencers that, you know, the world that, how do you feel about the world that you occupy? How do you reconcile your kind of feeling that in some ways this is all a bunch of made up shit, and in another sense that it's a huge part of
content creation for me is really like, it's an art form. It's an art form. So you're taking all this stuff that's out there, you're taking moments in time that exist in space time, and you're almost taking them all and framing them and presenting them in a very particular way, which resonates a certain frequency which people can pick up on. So for instance, like just seeing little Grayson's eyes watching something on TV, and then cut to little Rufus's hands, and then put color grading on that, and put the right music on that. And maybe if you have something to say that over that, you can really then turn, you can make poetry out of nothing. Mm. You just pick out these insignificant things that are happening. Like, I'm always fascinated by, if somebody says to me like, oh, I went to Scotland, for some reason I always think about, there were so many wheel turns of those fibers or that rubber fibers of that wheel turning. It would have turned one time when you were leaving on the M25, and that you'll never think about that wheel turn. It was just one of hundreds of thousands of wheel turns, but that happened, that moment in time happened. And that moment in time and all of those changes, molecular changes that happened, is poetry right there. But you're never going to see it or be able to tell it because you haven't got the right kind of equipment to do it. But once you get all these bits of equipment and you see all these things happening around you, these moments that are just so fleeting and gone, you can be like, I can make something out of nothing. Mm. I can make poetry. And then in a sense, poetry is making sense of something in an artistic way. So you're making sense of these weird, like insignificant moments that just make people kind of, I think sometimes when people watch something and you hit some videos, you can hit the nail on the head. Like sometimes you can make them, people will reach out to you. You always know, because I will get messages, people being like, oh, I love this week's video. And sometimes the frequency works. It's like when you listen to an album, there's always going to be like a couple of songs on there that are really good. I mean, ideally the musicians would want to make every one of those songs, those couple of songs, but they just can't. Sometimes they work, sometimes they don't. So sometimes the videos will hit that frequency. They'll find that rhythm. They'll find that thing that enough people can connect with it to be like, fuck man, this place is incredible. And what you're essentially doing is saying that, you're saying, look how amazing this fucking world is. Look how these insignificant moments that we just let go, like these fleeting things that happen, they're just gone. They're beautiful. They're all so beautiful, but we've it's so easy to let them just go and carry on with your life. I mean, walking around being like so in awe of everything the whole time would be quite time consuming. Neurologically, it'd be probably too difficult to do. But it's just important that you understand the beauty exists in every facet
and
of life.
And then there is something amazing about looking at the world through a lens.
Oh yeah, yeah.
It's you see it. I mean, the way you notice things, the way you the ability to capture it. Mm. How incredible is that?
The way light falls into a room, or the way it catches something, or the way it halos something, or the way something happens. You're opened up. You're more receptive now to all of these things. You know, I say to Hannah, look at that shot. Look at that shot. I say it to her multiple times in a day. She does it to me too, because you're seeing things as shots and how you can capture. It's all a pantomime, but it still is. This is what frustrates me about social media, is that the beauty exists out there, but people are choosing to jump on these certain frequencies which ignore all of that, and they just, but they're easy frequencies to jump on. For instance, like
trends.
For instance, somebody like Katie Hopkins, very divisive character. Yeah. I interpret whenever I listen to what she said, I would interpret, because I'd like listening to what she says, because I find people who are problematic interesting to listen mm-hmm. to, because I like, because of what they're doing. I'm fascinated by it. And I get told off. Like, some people will actually message me and say, I can't believe you follow this person, or Scott, because I'm just genuinely interested in what problematic people have to say, or mm-hmm. people who are causing issues have to say. But I don't interpret people like that. I don't listen to the language. I almost sense it as a frequency. So I feel everyone emits a frequency. You do, Hannah does, everyone has a frequency. And language is just a frequency that we're picking up and we're neurologically interpreting. But it is everything down to every movement is all a frequency. Mm-hmm. And so where was I going to go with this now? what were we talking about?
Katie before? Hopkins.
So Katie Hopkins is a frequency. And social media people that put stuff out there, they're emitting a frequency. And mm-hmm. that's what I interpret from it. Like, when I'm seeing some guy on TikTok, fucking reels, dressing in, a t-shirt, pouting at the camera, doing a spin, it makes me so upset. It makes me borderline fucking furious. And I'm like, you narcissistic piece of shit. You live in this beautiful universe full of all these incredible wonder out there, and you're choosing just to fucking present yourself dressed in some fucking barely affordable clothes for most people, and because you're so fucking self-righteous and smug and like egotistical. That's just you. What you want validation for? It's so obvious what you're doing, and it's so cheap and nasty. And it's a particular frequency, but I can see why people. Because it's an easy frequency. The thing is with Peggy Katie Hopkins, like, there's no nuance there. It's like, you can jump on her frequency and you can be like, oh yeah, yeah, it's easy. Like, you just, she carries you along. You're like, oh, I'm angry now. Oh yeah, she's right about that. And you're like, you don't, there's no thought that goes, you don't have to think deeper than what she's saying. You're like, she just carries you along. She finds that anger or that hostility that you have. And she's like, okay, I'll put you there. And I'll let you drift along on that. And you're on this lazy river of your own anger, and you just sort of, she's the one that's causing that momentum to drift you along on it. And it's that, and this is the problem with us these days, is that there's no nuance left in anything. So it's like everything, you have these frequencies, you jump on them, and then you just get carried along. And it's like that with most stuff I see on social media.
It's like, it is interesting. It's all the, I like your analogy of the lazy rivers. It's just all these different lazy rivers that, and especially with the whole way these platforms are set, like that, you know, you're literally scrolling down the lazy river, and off you go. See you later. You know, it's, and you know, just let's look out the window. I don't know what, something that sometimes, I catch myself thinking is, well, it's like, I wasted so many hours on social media, so many hours doing nothing. And sometimes I catch myself just like, what if, you know, what potential do I have as an individual if I just made use of all of my time?
Yeah.
You know, like, all of those hours, what if I'd spent them juggling and learning Spanish and creating really interesting
Or just being still. Or just not doing something, but just being in your own head, meditating, or just being still. I put you down in front, half an hour in front of your social media, and then you have a half an hour walk, and there's two universes. You come together at the end of those moments, and you tell me which one you feel more enriched by.
Never have I spent time scrolling on social media and stopped and thought, oh yeah,
no.
Oh, that was great.
No,
that was, I feel really good now. Like not once. And it's amazing how, you know, we've been on these, together, we've been on these weekends away where we'll be just log off of social media,
sitting in a wheelbarrow,
just sitting in a wheelbarrow, drinking lemonade, and it's amazing how long and full and rich a day can feel when you just log off, and when you put the watch down, you put the phone down, and you just kind of allow yourself to be.
Yeah,
it's incredible,
and that's I suppose that's my struggle with, because you're going back saying the struggle being social, being doing what we do, and almost having this love-hate relationship with it, because on one hand I love creating, I love making stuff, and I love our job, and I love doing what we do. But on the other hand, I really see it for what it is, and I really understand what it is and why the need for it.
But I look at what you guys do, and I do see it, you know, as an art form. You know, what you, the stuff that you create is amazing. You're not just, I don't know, you don't kind of jump on board trends.
No.
You're kind of creating content that you love, and it's storytelling. So I don't put you guys in the kind of, in the, you know, even with, you know, Hannah's very active on Instagram, and even she's not, I don't see her jumping in on all the trends and jumping into different outfits and doing all that nonsense. It's
yeah, she actively hates it as much as I do. And I think because, you know, scrolling through reels, maybe because the algorithm has just picked up that some wrong stuff for me, but I just feel it just fills me with the worst type. I'm very acutely aware of what's going on in my brain as I'm doing it, almost objectively, and it's not doing anything good for me.
No.
It's making me feel worse. It's making me feel angry. It's making me feel, it literally makes me feel angry.
Well, it's like a scratch that you just cannot itch. You're scrolling, and you have the sense that you're searching for something that you're never given. It's like you keep biting into an imaginary burger. You're never satisfied, and you can never grasp it until you put it down, and you kind of come out of that vortex and realize that, fuck, where have I been?
Yeah. But this is my, another thing that annoys me is people's inability to see through it. Like I just think a lot of these people, I see these narcissists on reels. There's this, oh God, the songs that they put on, this one at the moment, and they just, like, it goes into slow motion, and they just like, oh, it's a horrible, horrible song.
Reels is basically...
But like, it has like 400,000 views, 500,000 views. I'm like, what are these people doing?
Yeah.
Why are they, or like, they're just so popular. And I'm like, I think it's just, I was saying to Hannah the other day, I was like, it's just the first sign that, like, I'm just getting too old.
Does it anger you, or does it trouble you that you make, you can make incredible content, thoughtful content, artistic, well-produced content, and then that you get some twat that just jumps into an outfit and gets 10 times as many views?
I think I said this before. It's like, you're always, you know, you could have the chef who loved making food, but most people are going to want to eat a burger. You know what I mean? Most people just want something simple and easy. Most people want, you know, you could even have a burger shop where you have these beautiful ornate burgers you spend ages making, you passionately make. People still rather eat McDonald's. It's where they want to go. They're familiar with it. It's easy. They know what they're getting. It's like where people, this used to annoy me a lot of the time about music. I was always into house music and into like dance music. And I liked it because I was always hearing new shit. Like it had such a churn of new stuff coming through all the time. And whenever I'd be in a club with classics playing, I'd be so familiar with the song. I'd know every, like, because I've heard it so many times, I'd just be so bored. I'd be like, this is so boring, because I've heard this song. I've heard this fucking ABBA song, this Michael Jackson song, a billion times. I can't get excited about it. What really makes me excited is this new house song, which is building up to some crazy drop that I've never heard. It's made me, you know, neurologically, I'm much more stimulated by that. I'm not stimulated by familiar, but I think familiar is the path of least resistance. So people like familiar. People like the fact that Big Mac tastes the same in every single McDonald's across the world. People like that. They're not going to go in and taste anything new. People like listening to the classic songs. Like a band will be like, we're going to play some of our new stuff. People booing. Classic stuff I know and love. It's like people want the familiar. People want the stuff that's not going to make them swim upstream. They want to be on that lazy river that just carries them because it's easy. They don't want to So this is why I found really, you know, I can't listen to albums more than a couple of times. I think Pearl Jam 10 is probably one of the only albums I can. And that's only because it's nostalgic. It reminds me of being a kid. But most stuff I just can't hear more than a few times because I'm just get so innately bored. And the same with our videos. Like I can't watch our videos back because I'm just like, it's like, I've seen it. It's not giving me anything new. There's nothing exciting there for me anymore. Because I produced it and I made it. So I've kind of, I know where it was coming from. So yeah, I do get frustrated by that. I do get frustrated by, I suppose, but I can't be frustrated by something that people have no control of. People just want the easy option. And I get that. But it does annoy me sometimes. It's like people are not receptive to anything new.
It's frustrating. It's a frustrating part, I find, of the human condition. When everyone seems so comfortable, or that's what they seek. They seek that comfort, that consistency, and when it comes back to that, you know, to be honest, I'm sure I do that too, but I'm also terrified by the idea of staying in the same gear.
Mm.
You know, I spend so much of my time stressed out at the amount of stuff I've got to do and the things I've committed to and the responsibilities I've got and the deadlines coming up and the logistics I need to sort out. But that's always in the pursuit of chasing something bigger and more. It's like this ravenous appetite to just do the next thing.
Yeah.
Because, you know, as much as that frustrates me, the moment I have a day of calm, I'm terrified by that. Mm. And that kind of gives me anxiety because I feel like I need to, and then within no time I'm picking up the ball again and
I think in a way the circle's right back to jiu-jitsu because we need to be uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
We just need to be uncomfortable. One of my river dippers, we're in a little group called the Little Dippers, and we go, in the winter we'd go twice a week. Now it's once or twice a week to a river, stand in a river, and we're just very uncomfortable for about 10 minutes before we get out. And we're really uncomfortable when we get out because we're still freezing. But and sometimes we're literally under, I remember you saying the other day at jiu-jitsu, in no other situation, what was you saying? But no other situation would you ever put
sweaty balls in someone's face.
Yeah, or have them all be crushed between a burly man's thighs.
Yeah.
You know, in no other situation other than in a jiu-jitsu environment, could you see this huge sweaty man come towards you and then just roll around with him as his sweat's literally dripping in your mouth. Never would you ever be in that situation other than that environment. But being in those, being crushed under those people, being, you having your arm twisted behind your back and being strangled until you have to tap, and being standing in an ice cold river, it's so important for us to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And if we don't do that, we get so down and depressed because we just need to be uncomfortable. We need to be in difficult situations. Mm-hmm. Because we've built this life of comfort. Mm-hmm. We've built a life of such like Deliveroos and, you know, comfy sofas and like, you know, and filtered water and all this kind of luxury that we've built over the, over these years that we've just, it's happened so rapidly that we've not caught up to that. And now
I mean that's the one of the magical things about both jiu-jitsu and the cold water the stuff that we do is that so many of the skills and the life lesson, well, they are life lessons, it translates into your daily life and it makes you so much better at dealing with the discomforts of life, you know. If you want to live a life where you progress and you put yourself to the test and you want to grow, that's not going to be easy.
Mm.
That's not going to be easy, and there will be challenges. And what jiu-jitsu teaches you is, you know, so much of it is so analogous to life. You get used to being in uncomfortable situations, but you become okay with being there and you gain confidence in your ability to take yourself out of them.
Mm-hmm.
And the same with the cold water dips. It's fucking horrible when you get in there in the middle, in the winter. It's so difficult. Yet when you persist, you develop that confidence that you can deal with it, that you can sit in that uncomfortable feeling and move through it. And there's so many situations that I now have in my life where I think about those situations. I think about being in the river and I think about jiu-jitsu and it empowers me because I know that whatever the professional or personal difficulty that I'm going through is, I've trained my mind to be in an uncomfortable situation and to be okay with that. And that you can move through it.
Mm.
The other thing that the cold water does for me, changing track here a little bit, is that, and we've spoken about this before, is that I've always been someone that needed physical exercise. Mm-hmm. I'd always it was the remedy to my neuroses and stresses, you know. I've always exercised, and I found that vigorous exercise was always, you know, really putting your body to work was always the tool that I had to rebalance myself and to find my equilibrium to become balanced. And I didn't have any other tool to do that for the longest time other than really hard exercise. And in a way, that concerned me because I was like, well, what if I'm injured? What about when I get old? What am I gonna do then? Am I just gonna be miserable? And I didn't realize that this would be the case when we started doing our cold water stuff, but one of the benefits of the cold water is I think that when you put your body through that stress of the cold water, I think within the body and mind and soul, it's a closed system. So if you're feeling stressed out and anxious, when you physically exercise, you are exercising that stress. That leaves your body. As it leaves your body, it can't be in your mind. It's all part of the same.
That's a good way to put it.
And I found that the cold water swimming, again, the stress and hardship that you put your body through, it's the same stress that was in your mind, and it's come out through your body. It's been incredible.
Yeah. I mean, there's an old sort of almost trite analogy where they say, like, when you're getting a tattoo, like, the pain is just the weakness leaving the body. And it actually, like, it just sound a bit naff, but it actually helps when you're getting a tattoo. It's like, yeah, it's right. Like,
yeah, I've never thought about that.
It's just, that's what it is. It's a way of escaping.
Yeah.
It made a fundamental difference to my life, just getting in that cold water, especially over, you know, I mean, did it the day after losing dad. And I was really fascinated by what difference that would make, getting in the cold water. And I got in broken, man, and I got out, like, chatting away, laughing, joking. I was like, God, it's really balanced, really fun. Fair enough, it kicked back in, like, in a few hours later, but still, when I got out, I was fascinated by it, because what a good test for it to see, like, so all of this kind of speculation about how good it is for you. I don't think there's been any much concrete evidence of what it does for us.
I think the science of it is quite young, isn't
it? Yeah, exactly. So I was fascinated to give it that test. I was like, well, I'm never going to be in this. Hopefully, be in this situation only a couple of times in my life. It's a horrible place to be. We'll see what the cold water does. See how it helps with being bereaved and actually getting out. I was so amazed at, like, the difference it made mentally, like, how much I was more in control of it.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because when I think we started doing the cold water about the same time.
He died January. We started in November, I think it was. Yeah.
So back in November, I remember in my mind, I was like, oh, what a refreshing day, way to start the day, splashing water on your face. It's been so much more than that. So much more than that.
The frustrating thing for me now is that when the weather's warmer and the river's warmer, it's kind of annoying. I liked it when it was like sleet and snow outside and cold and dark, and I'd leave the house and it'd be pitch black and freezing cold.
Yeah.
And Hannah'd be like, you're mad doing this. And I'd be like, yeah, you're right. I fucking am. But I love it so much. I can't get enough of it. It's such a weird thing. And I think as well, just being in there with you guys, like, there's a little group of us now. We go down there and we're all suffering together, you know? And that's quite nice. It's just, it's something I would have never got to do in London as well. Going to stand in the Thames would never be an option. You'd come out with an extra limb.
We're a little team, aren't we?
Yeah. We've got this little team, and it's just, it's great. I really like it. And a good thing about Hannah, she's kind of lets me do it. You know, it's difficult in a family dynamic to find time for stuff, you know? You always sort of hustling to get you an hour here, an hour there.
You guys have got your balance down with that, though. You seem.
I mean, we had a massive argument this morning.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, we did, because I had lots of work to do, and she was taking the kid, Rufus, out to Babington, and I was like, "Oh, sorry, have you taken him to Babington? I've got this work to do." She's like, "Well, I need a couple of hours off. Oh, a couple of hours off after you go to Babington, eat some bloody salmon. You know, a couple of hours off after that. Is that gonna be strenuous, is it?" And then it just went into. I try and fly under the radar, but this morning I didn't do a very good job at that. Yeah,
so you definitely were no chameleon then.
No, I wasn't, mate. So
peacock.
Yeah, I was peacocking all over the place, but So we are quite good. I think she's realised over the recent months how important it is to have. Because when I first met her, she wasn't really into fitness that much. She did a bit of running, but never really into fitness. She's one of those, you know, people who could just eat eclairs 24/7.
And
I was always jealous. She'd always eat whatever she wanted and always be teeny. And I'd be like, bitch. But then when she got old, she never could understand why I was always into my CrossFit. And then I think she started doing her tonic in Bath, and she realized, shit, the endorphins I'm getting for this are crazy, especially with the pressures of kids and stuff like that. Just to have that, that It's the same thing, man. Like, it's the same thing. The cold water is the same thing, the same kind of hit you get from a good workout, you know, when you leave the gym and you're like, fuck, I killed myself. It's the same thing with a...
Isn't it crazy that there's people out there that you discover, you know, drugs and sex and all the like other you know, sex isn't a bad thing, but you know, you like to like the in a, to the extremes, you know, sex and drugs and is there fix outside of themselves. I'm so grateful that mine was jujitsu and cold water and exercise. And
you just got lucky, really, haven't you? That's the thing that helps you in a way. And same, you know, same with fitness. It's like, it's just, that's what helps me beyond everything else. I didn't want to go down any other road. Mm. Fitness was the only thing that really got me through these slumps.
Or even antidepressants, you know, like I talked of extremes of, you know, cocaine and heroin, but like even just people that just antidepressants. I think if people were educated more as to the benefits of just exercise, like and it's not just, oh, I've got a six pack. It's like, no, it's so much richer than
that. I do think there are situations, obviously, where that's the only option. I do think like people have tried other things and medication is the only option. But I would agree with you and say that before that road is taken, try, if you can, try exercise. Like I just had a situation when I was younger and I had some antidepressants that I got before I was doing any fitness. And I had the prescription and I was about to take them. And one of my friends just said, just do me a favor, man. Just go for a few runs before you take them. Because if you're feeling down and you're about to pop one, just go out for a run for a mile and then have one after the run.
Running is incredible.
And so I do that every time I'd be like about to have one. I'd be like, okay, I'm just going to put my trainers on, go for a quick run, and then I'll have one when I get back. And I go for a run and I wouldn't need it. And I'd be like, shit, there's something here. Mm. And then what really pushed me over the edge was, I suppose it was an ego thing. I remember meeting one of my exes in a club. And I said hello to him because there was a bit of a crossover and I had no issue with him. I didn't like her, but I had no issue with him. And I sort of said, hi, by the way, I'm Steph. Just sort of wanted to be nice. I hate those guys who are like, you bloody dickhead. You know, not one of those guys at all. So like, I just said, hi, how you doing? I'm Steph. And he was massive.
No way.
Huge arms. And I was like, and I had these peen little arms. Mm. Did my little run, like probably like once or twice a week. I was like, fuck this. Then I just got super into fitness. And then then that kind of showed me, actually, yeah, this is the answer. This is the answer, man. Beyond everything else, beyond drugs, beyond whatever it was, girls and whatever other things I was interested in. It was just like, I need to train. And just all I need to do is just train. And that's what, like, even yesterday, went to the gym for an hour, did jiu-jitsu for an hour, get into bed after that, broken. I'm like, I love being broken. Just loving my body's like, fuck that.
Yeah, when your body's like, fuck you.
Yeah, I love it. Or when you go for a massive hike and you just sit down, you're like, yeah, I love that feeling of just being like, oh, I'm destroyed.
I mean, it's incredible the way, again, counting my blessings, you know, I consider my body to be the most incredible tool that I'll ever own. You know, it's incredible tool that can do so many things. And some people, the way that people, so many people mistreat their body.
This is what my conflict about this is. It's like, I don't care. I genuinely don't care how big somebody is. It just doesn't bother me. It doesn't. If you're happy being big, good on you.
I mean, that's fine. The big thing, yeah.
Yeah, like, but what annoys me is that everybody acts like they really care about everybody else's weight. Whereas I don't care if you're fat. I don't care if you're skinny. I don't care if you're tall or short. I don't give a shit what weight you are. I don't, you know, I'm not going to lose sleep over any of that stuff. What I care about, like, is what I do care about is your mental health and how happy you are. You know, I want you to be happy. Fuck it, man. Whatever size, whatever you are, just try and
do it with a smile on your face.
Do it with a smile on your face. Exactly, man. And be open-minded and be happy. And that's all. But then again, you know, if you're not and you want my advice, then I'd say, you know, don't rule out antidepressants, but at the same time, try other things before you do that. Because, you know, I've had them, or I've not taken them, but I've had them prescribed. My sister's had them. They worked really well for her while she, you know, going through a rough patch. So I can see the benefits of them. But again, I think the harder option, but the more effective option, is training. And I know that's probably not the right mindset to have, but it's just my opinion. And I don't know, that's just the way I see things. But again, it's not the right opinion. It's just my spectrum of thought on things that, you know, isn't right or isn't wrong. It's just the way, yeah. Yeah, it's the kind of the gutless version. the man.
Remember, there is no right and wrong. Yeah. There is no objective truth.
Yeah.
There is.
Yeah. Yeah. But no, it's difficult, man, because like I said, some people just aren't wired up that way. You know, some people just don't. Training for them, they fucking hate it. Mm. I suppose everyone does. I don't think I ever go to train and do my legs and do squats and think, oh, I love this.
It's a
lovely feeling. I fucking hate every minute of it.
It is a funny one, isn't it? You put yourself in painful situations.
Mm.
And it's funny though, isn't it? But you get to the end of a workout and you're like, oh yeah.
Yeah.
Like, what kind of masochistic weirdo are you?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, it's, I reckon, I don't know. I reckon I'm going to keep doing it until I'm an old man, hopefully, and just change it. Do yoga maybe. And
we'll be red belts in jiu-jitsu, 90 years old.
You have to be doing jiu-jitsu black belt for 18 years, I think, if we can even get close to a red belt. If you're black belt,
we got that many years in us.
I don't know.
We'd be a bit older, but.
I don't know. I'm planning to go around 70-ish.
Is that it? You got you.
Yeah, I think 70 is a good like for me. I'm like, I'm done. I'm always the guy who like leaving the parties nice and early. You know what I mean? I like if the party's even good, I'm like, I just like going early.
Don't be the one that sat there shitting his pants and throwing up on himself.
Yeah,
you'll get out before then.
Yeah, my dad always said he was like, I'd rather be a living dog than a dead lion. And I'm always like, no, I'd rather be the dead lion.
Mm.
I'm not that scared of like, I mean, I say that I'm not scared of death, but you give me like some sort of, tell me now I've got some horrible like, you know, 3 months to live. I'll be petrified. I'll be crying. I'll be in a ball. Mm. But I like to think that I'm like, yeah, it doesn't really bother me. We're all going to die. I'm not that scared, but I probably am really secretly. But, I do think 70 years. But then when I get to 70, I'll be like, what? I feel like I'm probably.
Yeah, you might be a stud.
I'll be like, what the hell, man? Years to go.
You would have just got your red belt. You'll be supple as ever.
Yeah.
You'll be good to go.
Yeah. Right, man, we have talked for 1 hour. And 40 bloody minutes.
You serious?
Yeah.
We've got so much more to talk about.
I know. Oh, we'll do another podcast, mate.
All right.
Thank you very much for listening to JC Babes and me. We've loved talking about all sorts, jiu-jitsu, cold water, the universe, all sorts of stuff we don't really understand, but pretend we do.
Thanks, Steph.
Thanks, mate. That was super fun. Cheers, JC. Follow you on at Mr. Super Pirates.
Yeah, if you Super Pirates it, you'll find us.
Super Pirates. Go and say hello to JC.
Thanks, guys.
Cheers, guys.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.